If you are calling yourself a mentor and you're getting paid, you are not a mentor. Maybe you're a coach. Maybe you're an advisor. You're something else, but you're not a mentor. And that's because it's the same principle as if you said, if I said to you, Dom, hey, would you ever volunteer at a soup kitchen? You'd probably say yes. And then I said, hey, Dom, would you volunteer to work at Starbucks every morning from 9 to 11?
Hell no.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth, Going Strong Today, like 9-Pack Abs, known as podmatch.com. Wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts, and if they're cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than 10 cucumbers a day, y'all. That's right, indeed. Because you're going to be in for a treat that's good enough to eat. Because today's wonderful guest, y'all, she's a bookcaster, y'all. So not only is she a wonderful, wonderful author who's joined the business of immortality by putting pen to paper, she's also a podcast host, too. So that means it's going to be double the fun. And on top of that, she's an applied developmental psychologist as well as an award-winning researcher. So you heard that right, folks. She's been writing papers and getting blue ribbons all over her body for them, y'all. You'll love to see it. As well as a consultant, TEDx speaker, and the founder and CEO of the Mentor Project. So let's give it up for the delightful and daring, the fabulous DH herself, the one, the only, Dr. Deborah Heiser. How you doing today, Dr. Deb?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on your show. Wow, that was some intro. Thanks. That was impressive.
I mean, hey, it's you.
Hold on, sound like nothing. There was not even a pause. You really have the best voice ever.
Oh, thank you. Right indeed. Right indeed. I'm like, hey, at least got to give something right before the rabbit hole show up. Yeah, sometimes the bunnies come in different colors, you know. It's right indeed. It's like, oh, spent too long in those sci-fi books again. The bunny turned pink and green. It's psychedelic. Come back to the white bunnies. They need to be mentored back into reality. Well, it ain't about bunnies. It's about you. So my goodness, as with all introductions, they're not allowed to be 750 days long and a problem only covered. I don't know, metaphorically 7 minutes of my filling it in, and I became the fabulous Dr. Deb that you are today.
First of all, thank you for having me on. I'm really excited to be here. As you said, I'm an applied developmental psychologist, and I have been an aging researcher for a long time. And a lot of people wonder how I shifted that into mentorship. And the two actually go together. It's something that most people don't realize. So back when I was doing my research originally, I wanted to cure grandmas from depression because I had a grandma who was depressed when I was, I don't know, 19 or 20, and I didn't even know what depression was. So when I saw that someone was able to help her to get better, I said, that's what I want to do. And I went out, I started doing research on everything none of us ever wants to get. None of, you know, depression, frailty, Alzheimer's disease, all that stuff. And I was feeling really amazing about the work I was doing and went to a conference and was so excited to tell everybody about all the stuff I was doing. And it landed flat. And somebody said to me, well, you're studying all of the things none of us want to get. And so what do we have to look forward to? So I was like, less depression, you know, and he said, you're just putting a Band-Aid on everything we don't want to have. I'm still afraid to get old. And so that was an aha moment for me. And I went back to the drawing board and I said, I need to find out for myself also, what am I looking forward to? And then I came across research by Eric Erickson and a lot of developmental theorists who looked at aging as something that I had never looked at before. It was an emotional trajectory. So we all think of aging as something physical, and we forget that there's an emotional component to it. So when we're little, people will say, you know, what do you want for your kids? And we'll say, when our kids are little, I want them to grow up to be happy. No one says, I want them to grow up to run fast or to do things that are physical generally. They are talking about their emotional development, but we sort of lose sight of that along the way. And we think of our development strictly in physical terms. So what I found was that when we age, we actually get happier over time. That doesn't ever decline. So we may not run as fast. I can't run as fast as I could in my 20s, but I don't care. I wear reading glasses now, but I don't care. I'm happy. I'm happier than I was then because I know who I am. So when I made that shift and pivoted, there's a stage in midlife that we hit. It's called generativity. And it's where we care for others without expecting anything in return. And I was really curious about that because there's three ways that we can do that. We can give back to others through volunteering, mentoring, and philanthropy. And I'm like most people, I really don't have enough money to have a building named after me. So that's out. Volunteering, great. But I wanted to do something that was part of me to give back my expertise and share that with others because it felt like I was giving, you know, something that would make it so that my life had meaning and there was purpose there, that my footprint on the earth would have some kind of relevance. So I chose to really look at mentorship because when I was talking to people, I was talking to some of the people that have made world changes, you know, like one of the fathers of the firewall, which is how we can communicate safely and do our banking and all that stuff online. He was one of the first people to do that and wrote the first book on that. And the person who patented how we use credit cards on the internet. These sorts of people that were saying, I don't have access to anybody. And as I'm hitting retirement age, I feel irrelevant. I want to be useful. I want to, you know, have value to society. And they didn't have people to give back to. And so we formed the Mentor Project so that we could match up people who had skills and wanted to give them back to others and allow mentees, students around the world to access their expertise for free. And that's what started it all. And in the book, I talk about all the different kinds of mentoring, what it is, what it isn't, and all of that. But it all started from development and how we're built to want to give back.
That's what I'm talking about. Indeed, I'm talking about it. Indeed. You'll love to see it. It's so great when you drill down so much, you finally find your niche. And it's like, yay, all right, cool. I'm in the aging realm now. It's like, all right, cool. It's like, it ain't Band-Aids no more, y'all. It's about making sure you develop and become a wonderful walking Greek statue with all the wisdom.
Right? You know, we become immortal. That you're exactly right. You know, we become like that Greek statue that we see thousands of years later. We live on in others and have a legacy, and it's a form of immortality.
Heck, indeed. So right days, especially nowadays, where it's like a lot of folks have a lot of wisdom they probably want to share, especially when they get to their, I guess, more seasoned years, for lack of a better term, especially since a lot of folks are living a lot longer these days, a lot of more centenarians than usual. So I was like, hey, they're probably going to want to share some to their grandkids, and I guess in this case, some of their great-great grandkids.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you look around and if you think about all the traditions, think about Thanksgiving and what you eat, and if there are traditions around that, that didn't come out of nowhere. That was somebody passing that down. That's mentorship. And we don't think of it that way, but every year I make the same turkey that and all the sides that my grandmother made, and it's in her handwriting, the recipes. And if I alter that at all, people are going to get mad. And it's because you expect it. It's tradition. There's a value in that. There's memories attached to that. That's how religion gets passed down through centuries. That's how all of our family history gets passed down. All of the ways that we work and interact with others, we think of mentoring usually as a job-related thing. But the most powerful ones are the ones that are in our personal lives. So do not underestimate the power of a grandma, because she is probably passing along wisdom that goes way beyond chicken soup and other things that are in your family that live on through you and through your children and your children's children.
The children's children, indeed. It's right, indeed. And chicken soup, it's right, indeed. Folks are like, don't be chicken. But when the chicken goes in the soup, it becomes super. So it's not chicken anymore. So out of curiosity, is that a chapter title of one of your books? Or should I say a chapter title of Mentorship Edge? Don't underestimate the power of grandma.
It's not, but there is a story of a grandma in there. And, you know, it's a very relatable one that most of us don't think of as mentorship. And I knew this woman. She's really a fabulous woman. And her daughter and son-in-law went to New York because he was going to become an oral surgeon. And she lived in Georgia, and they all lived in Georgia, and he was coming up to go to dental school. So they had a son, and they needed her to watch him while they were up furthering the final stages of his education. And so he would stay down with his grandma, and she said, I want him to become somebody who has a lot of values that are my values. I want him to have manners. I want him to do well. And all of those things she imparted to him in a way. She had goals with this. She really wanted to mentor him to be the exact person that would be him, but with her values that are instilled in him. And I can tell you that this child came to my wedding. And he was the most adorable little baby. And I got to see him when he was about 16, and he was getting ready to apply to colleges. And he was like a top student. He had all the values that she really prided herself. And she felt amazing. Like, she did her job as a mentor. And everyone said, wow, yes, she was the one who instilled these values in me and who made me want to go do great things. And he's off doing amazing things now. And there's so many people around the world that do this, and we don't think of them as mentors, but they are. It is those values, and it is the wisdom that they are imparting to their grandchildren that really make them soar. And if anybody is listening who has a grandparent who did that, I had a grandfather that did that for me, then you know just how powerful that is and how life-changing it is and how it stays with you. So that is an example in there about a grandma who was way more than chicken soup.
There you go. That's right, indeed. I guess there might be a Substack article down the road. Grandmother's way more than chicken soup, y'all. That's
right. I love that title.
Yeah, that's right, indeed. Yeah, that ain't your average podcast interview. You might be brainstorming something. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. It's like a bowl of chicken soup with a cape. That's right, indeed. yes, indeed, yes, indeed. So, my goodness, so all this wonderful research you've done over the years, you finally are joining the business of immortality for the good public, as I jokingly say with your fabulous book, The Mentorship Edge. So, how's it like putting the book together? Because I know there's probably a whole bunch of stuff you had to take out. It's probably going to be a 2,000-page book if they told you to stop.
You know, putting it together it just like fell out of me in many ways, you know, like, because I've been doing this for so long, and I think of mentorship and write about it differently than most. Most people think of mentoring as go and grab some information from some nameless, faceless individual. And I look at mentoring from the perspective of the mentor. You know, you can't grab something from somebody, you know, like the grandma. You can't just say, hey, give me all your wisdom. I want all your chicken soup stuff. You know, it doesn't work that way. You have to want to give away what you are giving to people. And somebody has to be willing and ready to receive it. It's a two-way street. So in the book, really, I am writing a lot of this from the perspective of why do we want a mentor? What is mentoring? What is it not? And there are some key components that go into mentorship that I talk about in the book. And those, it's kind of like if you were to bake brownies and you left an ingredient out, it'd look like brownies, but if there's no sugar in it, it won't taste like brownies. Mm. And in the case of mentorship, it's similar. We need a few things. One is generativity, which is if I do not have a desire to give back my knowledge or information to you, we are not going to have a mentoring relationship. And likewise, if I'm the mentee and somebody's giving me their wisdom and I'm just not taking it, we don't have a mentoring relationship. You have to have both people, one willing to give and one willing to receive, because you're not passing it on otherwise. And we've seen cases of that where people say, I'm going to give my wisdom to you. And the person's like, ah, thanks, but no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generativity. We also need to have intrinsic motivation. And what that means is that I have to want to do it without getting paid. If you are calling yourself a mentor and you're getting paid, you are not a mentor. Maybe you're a coach. Maybe you're an advisor. You're something else, but you're not a mentor. And that's because it's the same principle as if I said to you, Dom, hey, would you ever volunteer at a soup kitchen? You'd probably say yes. And then I said, hey, Dom, would you volunteer to work at Starbucks every morning from 9 to 11?
Hell no.
Right. But see, it's the same thing. You're giving out food and beverage to hungry people. But in one, you feel good about yourself. And the other, you feel like a schmuck, right? So that's intrinsic motivation. And that's exactly what happens when you pay people to mentor. You're not mentoring anymore. You're working at Starbucks. And so, you know, I talk about that key component that is often wrong in the workplace. You know, you can see it that a grandparent would be very motivated intrinsically to, you know, want to help out and guide their grandchild. But when you're at work, if you're getting paid for that, you are not, you know, you're working at Starbucks. You are not getting that same feeling that you are from being at a soup kitchen helping people. So that's the second one. The third is that you need to have meaningful connections. So I have to like you and you have to like me in a way that I say, I want Dom to thrive. I want him to do really well in life. And you have to say, you know what? I trust that she's giving me good information. I want to take it. I want to see her. I want to take her wisdom and move on with that. And that's powerful. You know, we don't take the advice from everybody. There are some people that we say, there's no way I'm taking that person's advice. So we have to have that two-way street from the mentor and the mentee. There can't be the assumption that there's a connection and somebody's going to take some of the wisdom and leave some out. Or, you know, it's got to be that you're both on the same page. We also need to have trust. If you don't trust somebody, if you think, if I tell my boss, I don't know, I need some guidance and I think they'll fire me, I'm not going to that person. Or I'll mask it in some way, and it's not truly a mentorship relationship. And we also need to have a goal. So if you're just meeting up with somebody and you don't have a goal, you're really not mentoring them. You're not guiding them in anything. You can't just sit there and spill out your wisdom and hope somebody's going to pick it up. So these ingredients that exist here are all really important. And if you miss one, you're going to have, you know, a flavorless brownie.
Yep, that's scary right there. It's like, yep, imagine serving that flavorless brownie working at the Starbucks at the morning shift too. It's a double whammy.
Exactly, right? Yeah, exactly. For free.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like, sure. Yeah, that's one heck of a freak.
example right there. That's a wonderful teach tour right there, the compare and contrast. Like Soup Kitchen, oh yeah, you know, helping out folks, you know. Starbucks, like, oh God, no. Just that visual, it's like, oh Lord, no. And it was done customer service, and it's like, dude, America's number one legal drug known as coffee. Like, you messed that up, oh Lord. Just the visuals that popped to me as soon as you said that one. I'm like, oh, Lord, no. That's just asking for it. It's about to be the mentorship edge without the mentorship in that case.
Yeah. You know, but think about your life and everything you do and how you associate all kinds of things like money and things like that with getting someplace or having something or a paycheck. You do not associate it with any of your volunteer efforts or any of your philanthropic thoughts. They're two separate things. And if I said to you, go out and every time you read a book, if you're a person who loves to read, I don't have to tell somebody who loves to read to go read a book. But if I start to say, I'm going to pay you every time you read a book, you will read less. You know, studies show that that's what happens. As soon as you add a monetary factor onto anything, you're removing that intrinsic or the motivator that the person already had going for them, and it changes it so they don't want to do it anymore. It moves it to Starbucks. So I'm not trying to throw Starbucks under the bus, but it really does work that way, and research shows it. So there's real power in that. And, you know, mentoring is something that when people talk about it, they talk about it as an interaction that is sort of like reciprocity, or that it's being generous from the mentor's perspective. And it's not. You know, the difference between generativity and generosity is that if I go to an ice cream shop and I get an extra scoop of ice cream, that's a generous person who just gave me a nice thing. But then I eat it and it's gone. And if I'm generative, I'm taking a piece of me and it's living inside of you forever. It's not gone. I've given it away and it feels generous, but then you've taken it inside and it never leaves. I'm generating something from myself to you. And if we think of reciprocity, you know, that's also not generativity and not part of the mentoring component, because it's like a tit for a tat. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You know, I'm expecting you to do something in return, so I'm not doing it intrinsically. I'm not motivated that way. I'm expecting something, some kind of a reward from you. And most of us, when we think of mentoring and people say, go find a mentor, they're thinking of a reciprocal relationship. They're thinking, I'm going to go find somebody and get some information from them, get a couple of doors open and move myself along. And they're never thinking about that other person. So it becomes that generous scoop of ice cream that they're getting that doesn't live on in them. They haven't brought it into themselves and aren't moving it forward. And an example of that is there is a Nobel Prize winner from 2012. His name is Bob Lefkowitz. And he was wondering how mentorship worked, because during the Vietnam War, people who were physicians were sent to this one yellow beret area where they could, you know, get their final physician work done and do some research and stuff like that. And a ton of them became Nobel Prize winners. And he was like, I don't know how that happened. So he said, I'm going to make a legacy tree. So just like we have ancestry.com, where you see like all your relatives that go back so many generations and everybody to the side and all of your offspring on it, he did that with mentorship. So he made, you know, himself in a certain level. And then he had all of his mentors above him. And then everyone that he knew of that was below him. And he published it in a journal. And right after he published it in the journal, he went to a conference. And somebody said to him, hey, Bob, I'm 6 degrees Lefkowitz. And he was like, what are you talking about? And he said, there are 5 people between you and me. And he said, oh, okay. What are you working on? And the guy told him what he's working on. And Bob was able to hear his work and what this guy was doing 6 degrees away from him. And he had taken Bob's work and expanded it out. But he was able to hear Bob's own his own words, his own work, and this guy 6 degrees away from him. And he said that was one of the most meaningful things that ever happened to him, because he now understood his relevance. He understood that his footprint was firmly in the ground, that he mattered, that his work mattered. And we usually don't get that opportunity. So it wasn't until he created that legacy tree that he was able to see his impact. So I would say to people, create a legacy tree, because you definitely, every one of us has one. And it isn't just our family. It's all those that we interact with. And following up to see where that thread of your info went out is really, really cool. And the other cool thing is he actually has like a visual of his legacy tree where you can see it just like an ancestry.com, except it's really his wisdom throughout it. It's kind of cool.
Ooh, probably cooler than two cucumbers. I'm talking about indeed. So my goodness, you probably touched a bit on this earlier. So my goodness, folks probably have this general idea of what mentorship is, but is there like any fallacies out there about mentorship of what it isn't?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of it. One is that you are not a mentor if you are paid. The other is people will think that an advisor is a mentor, and you are not an advisor and a mentor at the same time. You're an advisor. An advisor is paid. Like, so if you go to college and you have an advisor, that person is supposed to guide you. They're getting paid to guide you. They're getting paid to tell you what kind of classes you should take. That is their role. Can they be a mentor as well? They can, but it has to be off the clock. So an example of that would be, you know, Professor Weinberger at Adelphi University is an advisor to students. One of his students became a graduate student in the PhD program, and he was her advisor. When she was done with her program, he said, "Hey, would you like to write a book together?" And he mentored her in writing and taught her and worked with her on how to write a book. And so that role changed and shifted from advisor to mentor, but they weren't that at the same time. And a sponsor is not a mentor. A sponsor is somebody who goes out and they give the shout out. So every person I say, "Hey, go on Dom's show. You know what? Open some doors for Dom. He's amazing." That's a sponsor. I'm not a mentor. A coach. A lot of people say that they're a coach and that means that they're a mentor or they're mentoring when they're a coach. No, wrong. Zero. That's a big zero. If you are paid, you are not a mentor. So I will say to coaches who say they're a mentor, I say, "Oh, well, then are you going to bill your client?" "Why, yes, I am." "Then you're not a mentor. You're a coach." So this is the difference between these. So I really like people to know that difference, because as soon as you remove the money from it, you can see it's like the tide goes out, right? And you're left seeing who's the true mentor there. Everyone else is getting washed away, who is either getting paid or in another role. Networking is not mentoring. So people will think, "Well, I'm making all these connections." That can lead to a mentor. One of your connections might become a mentor, but networking is not mentoring. Every person you meet is not going to be your mentor. So there are more than 8 billion people in the world. You should be able to find a mentor. That is for sure. But not every one of those 8 billion people is your mentor, even if you're connected with them. Another one is that there's something that has changed with more of us being online. You can have a mentor who is online. You can read and have these. It's missing one of the components, which is the meaningful connection, but I can feel connected to you watching or listening to your show. That is not a two-way street. You will not know who I am necessarily, but I can get mentored by you in that way. So it's a less strong mentorship, but I can still get that from modern mentoring. They now have these AI-generated bots. Like, there's a coach called Marshall Goldsmith who has an AI-generated bot that gives out his wisdom. You can get mentorship if you are looking to be a coach from that, but is it as strong as a meaningful personal connection? No. So we're seeing some shifts in it. And those the sort of modern mentoring are kind of a little in the gray area, but I'd still consider them mentoring because we're shifting and moving into a more tech world. And so we have to be able to include those in that way, is my impression with that.
So I'm talking about indeed. It's interesting. So there's folks out there who think networking is mentoring. That's a new one to me. I never thought of that one.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that think if you go make a connection, that is a mentor. Mentoring is talked about so often. And in a lot of ways, you know, I feel like people think that they're mentoring their dog when they take it out for a walk. You know, mentorship is often such a wide range that I felt like this book that I wrote was going to sort of dial it back a little and show that where it really is. You are not mentoring your dog when you take it for a walk.
A dog mentor. I bet there's someone out there with that title already. It's like, yes, I mentored my dogs in the ways of Wolf. When I wolf, they don't know, but when they wolf, they know. When the meow enters the room, you know you're so wrong. So my goodness, I imagine you do a whole bunch of writing. So do you have any writing rituals that get you in the zone for peak performance Deb writing mode?
No, you know, and I wish I did. I'm one of those writers who, you know, if I have a real inspiration, it'll just come out. And otherwise, it is painfully difficult for me to write if I'm not feeling it. And I think that, you know, I've heard that with artists and other people, you have to get into the flow. The flow state is where it's in between anxiety and boredom. Just right in the middle. It's like the, you know, the middle bear in the Goldilocks book. It's just right, or the middle porridge. And so what I do when I write is I need to get into that stage. I need it to be that there's some kind of a deadline looming over me, you know, so that I am motivated and I have some anxiety. But I need to know the material just enough so that when I write, I can really let it flow. And I can hit that flow state. When I get there, it's just phenomenal. A time and space leave, and I'm just writing. So I also have to give myself time for that, which I don't always have. But, you know, I don't know about other people. Writing is such a great outlet because you can see the flaws in your thinking when you write it down on paper. And so sometimes I'll speak and think I have a great idea, or I'm still formulating some things that I'm putting together. And it's not until I write it that I have to really understand it and know it really, really well, because all those flaws emerge when you put it on paper. And that to me is the best way to be able to show that you've mastered something, is when you're able to articulate something that somebody else can understand clearly.
Nah, you're so right about that. I guess pun unintended, but I'm going to let it be intended.
Do you write, Dom? Do you write?
Oh, yeah. Got a couple books under my belt, and I've had great ideas. Like, went to a coffee shop, like, yeah, this sounds freaking great. Let me write it down. Like, oh, this is fire. Can't wait to put this in the presentation. And they go back a couple days later and read it again. I'm like, man. Was I on drugs when I wrote this?
Like, every writer's been there, right? Where you put something down and you feel like that was profound, and then you reread it and you're like, that was terrible. But it's like a reality check for your thoughts in a way, because when you're writing, you know, you really get to see any kind of flaw that's in your thinking. Oh, this does not connect between this and this. I made a leap in my thinking with this and this, or this person that I'm writing about, I'm missing a key component of it. And I really love that about writing, because, you know, when you are coming up with a new theory or a new idea or a new way of looking at things, which you would have been doing in your books, right? Anytime you write a book, you're doing that. You have to connect all those dots, or it's never going to work. It won't fly. And so that's the one thing that I really love about it. Because once you've done it, once you've connected those dots, isn't it such a feeling of, I got this now? That's it. There's nothing like the feeling of having written, because you know it's all in there and it's all good. It's the part up until then when you're saying, oh, I've got to add this in, or oh, I better remove that. That's not really accurate, or things like that when you're fiddling around with it.
Heck yeah, that's right indeed. When you fiddle too much and you wake up the next day with an oboe, like, oh, I think I fiddled too much again. I didn't know I was growing musical instruments here. I thought it was
Well,
just corn on a
I'm
cob.
gonna go though. Your association doesn't quite match for me, going from fiddle to an oboe. An oboe is a wind instrument, so I don't know.
Cello, that's what I was looking for. There we go.
Okay. All right.
Now that
That
makes sense.
works.
There we go.
But that's just like writing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You say something and then you get fact checked when you write it.
See, there you go. Or those are them trap doors I told you about. So, since you've been on so many interviews on both sides of the microphone, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often on the guest side of the game?
Yeah. How can people become more engaged in mentorship? I think that if I were to answer that, I would say that people really just have to look to their left and look to their right. Everyone around you is a potential mentor. You do not have to look for an sort of an elusive face, faceless, nameless individual that is going to be the one person that's going to help you. We stand on the shoulders of all of the people around us who lift us up and elevate us all the time. This is your family members, your friends, your colleagues, your coworkers. It's not just a boss or somebody above you hierarchically. Our most powerful mentors are those who are lateral to us. And so the best way to get engaged is to look to your left and look to your right. See who's there, because they probably have an area of expertise that you're lacking and they can help you in some way. And find another one is, don't always just be looking for somebody to do for you. If you see somebody else that's struggling in an area, say, hey, I have that expertise. Can I help you out? Because there's no bigger joy than seeing someone unwrap a gift that they absolutely love. And you get to have that experience every time you help somebody when you mentor them.
Heck yeah, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's why a lot of folks got two hands for a reason. It's like, hey, it's also forgiving y'all. That's right, indeed. You don't have to always seek to absorb and take. It's gotta be give and take, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right. You don't even have to be scratching backs either. It's just because, you know. Right, indeed. Sometimes it's good to be nice just to be nice, as the old pastor used to say.
That's so true.
Oh, yeah. That's right, indeed. That's how you can get more engaged with mentoring. So, you heard that right, folks. You don't have to get an engagement ring to engage with mentoring. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Because then that'll be that money thing again. And it wouldn't make any
That's right.
sense.
Yeah, you don't want to be motivated by that engagement ring. You want to be motivated by, the biggest motivator, I'll tell you, Dom, that people tell me is that. And they'll cry. So many people cry when they tell me about being a mentor. Most people think that mentors don't get anything out of it. But if you've ever given someone a gift that they've unwrapped and you can imagine in your mind's eye the person receiving it and they have really loved it, it's exactly what they wanted and needed, the joy that you feel, we get joy in giving physical gifts to people. The mentors will say, I feel better than I ever could have. It means more to me than being mentored. It's that same feeling, but it lasts much longer because every time they reflect on it and remember it, they get that same warm, fuzzy feeling again. And it's like the endorphins that flow through you, you can't match that with anything else synthetic. It's just unbelievably powerful. It's like the elixir of life.
The elixir of life. You love to see it. You love to see it. Well, speaking of elixir of life, there's also nourishment that gives life too. And your book is just that, food for the mind. So if your fabulous book, The Mentorship Edge, Creating Maximum Impact Through Lateral and Hierarchical Mentoring, if that book were a food, what would it be and why?
It would be the most delicious brownies you've ever eaten because it has all the right ingredients in it.
If I could tell what your favorite dessert is now.
Actually, there's a lot of favorite desserts I have. But brownies happens to be the one that, you know, if you do like a dessert, you can get away with some things changing. If you make chocolate chip cookies and you change it from butter to shortening or something, you're not going to notice it that much. But boy, you change something in brownies and ooh, it goes south fast.
Ah, so I mean, you're talking about those other kind of brownies too, the Colorado brownies. All right, I see what you're putting down.
That's a little more than mentoring.
That's right, folks. There's brownies and there's brownies.
I guess that would be the mentorship edge brownie. Colorado.
Yep, that's right indeed. Yeah, that mentorship brownie. You wake up the next day with gray hair. That's right indeed. With hair on the chest and 9-pack abs. Like, yes. Wisdom went from my brain to my freaking core. That's right indeed. Take that gym membership. Mentored some kiddos. Built some character. That's right indeed. And if you have gray hair, you just wake up with brown hair. That's right. Either way, it's hair. Hair for a... Well, here it comes down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive. And that is, if you're going to wake up tomorrow and you were 25 again, but you're still in the current year with all of your knowledge and experience, what advice would you give to yourself?
I would tell myself to relax a little bit and to realize that you have people around you that you can rely on, and that that is really what's going to be able to get you through everything. You are not alone. Most people at 25, and myself included, I felt like I had to do everything on my own, and you don't. You should expect never to have to do everything alone.
Yeah, that's right indeed. Don't have to do it alone, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. You may think it's glorious in the end, be like, yeah, I did all of my own, y'all. Like, truth be told, not really. No one did it on their own.
No. But ask any 25-year-old, and they often think they did. They don't realize, you know, that there are a lot of people holding them up along the way and getting them to where they're going. And it's a burden to feel that you're doing everything on your own. And you're not being accurate either. So why not just acknowledge that you had the support and help from others? Because then you know in the back of your mind that if tough times come ahead, you have people to fall back on.
Thank you, indeed. That's right, indeed. Not everybody could be a plumber, electrician, and rocket scientist all in the same lifetime.
You know, you can. You can. I know so many people who retire and they go do whatever it was that they wanted to do before, couldn't do before. There was an artist who became a bus driver. And you know why? Because he got to get in on all the games down south for free. And he got to go right where all the players were. So that was, you know, an incentive. So you can be a bunch of different, you know, things throughout your life. You might say, hey, I did a job. I'm going to become a plumber now or an electrician now, or flip it around the other way. I see that all the time. We're living longer and longer. You can be as many different people as you want, wear as many different hats.
There we go. That's right indeed. That means we're coming for you, David Blaine. We're going to become a magician. That's right indeed. Among other things. Let me stop.
The world is your oyster. Do it. Do everything that you ever want to do. Don't hold back. And use a mentor to get you.
Heck yeah, indeed. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. Because there's magic and mentorship, y'all. That's right, indeed. There's magic and mentorship, indeed. That's right, indeed. And you heard it from the lady who probably creates all the mentorship wands metaphorically. So for those who need to keep in contact with you, and heck, maybe even buy a metaphorical wand known as your magical book, what's the best way for folks to do so, Dr. Deb?
Well, you can find the book anywhere that you buy books, but you can reach me at DeborahHeiser.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, Deborah Heiser, PhD. Always happy to talk with people and correspond with people. And I do hope you'll check out the book. I think that it can really help people to get more connected and engaged.
Heck, indeed. That's right, indeed. Congrats on getting Wiley to publish it, too. That's freaking huge.
They're a great publisher. I have to shout out Wiley.
Heck, indeed. That's right, indeed. And will there be an audio version, too, read by you?
I don't think it's going to be read by me, but you know what? I don't think so, but hey, things can change. You never know.
Hooray, let's hope they do. That's right, indeed. That's right. Get the Dr. Deb in your brain, y'all. Get a voice in your brain. That's right, indeed. That's right. It's about that mentorship, y'all. That's right, indeed. Get it in there more ways than one, and then go out and be a mensch to the world, y'all. That's right, indeed. For those who will be happy metaphorical kangaroos, taking your pearls, putting it in their metaphorical pouches, hopping about, being, yay, I got new wisdom. And then you can shed tears of joy and be like, yes. That's right, indeed. They came to me as a wonderful turtle, but they left as a kangaroo with a pouch with all my pearls in it. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right. If they come as a pig, it's over.
Oh, my goodness. I like it better when you had the fiddle around and it became a cello.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was more straightforward, you know. Yeah, that was me trying to do the whole casting pearl before swan thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Kind of that the whole, yeah, 30-foot deep hole. Yeah, well, before it becomes 150 feet, any parting words before we close up shop, Doc?
I want to say thank you to you because I think that, first of all, you're really fun, and I've never met anybody who has as many metaphors as you. And I think that's pretty darn cool. You must be like the best writer because it's hard to come up with good metaphors. And the only other thing I really do want to say as a final word is I hope you'll check out the Mentor Project and I hope you'll check out the Mentorship Edge because I really hope that people listening will acknowledge mentorship in their own lives and become more engaged in mentorship.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog, too, while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.